Evidence Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Evidence Footprints. My name is Don Nikoloff, and I've got an echo, and let's see if we can get rid of it. I am speaking to you on March the 11th on the East Coast, March 10th on the West Coast, and I'm hearing two of myself here, so bear with me until we get one of these voices stopped. Still there. Seth, I don't know if you can hear that. Maybe you want to listen in the headphones. Let's see. Where can we start? Well, I got a chance today to listen to a couple of the fine shows on bbsradio.com, and I want to encourage everybody to have a listen next week to the Inner Dialogue featuring Doug and Tyler. Doug is the heart of BBS Radio, and Tyler is really clicking with him, and I'm sure you're going to find out something very interesting, and the echo has disappeared, so thank you, Seth. also, I want to put in a special word for my good friend and fellow broadcaster, Dr. Leonard Horowitz. He appears every Tuesday evening, 1 hour before Evident Footprints. That's at 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And now I guess we're at Pacific Daylight Time, is it? I get confused. I don't know if it's Standard Daylight or whatever. We play these games with the clocks. Anyway, an hour before Evident Footprints, Dr. Horowitz comes on and reveals a lot of truth. The stuff that you're not going to hear from the scientific community, nor from the religious community, nor from the government. And he's a one-man show, although he is frequently joined by Reverend Roxy Hampton, also a good friend of mine. I was on Reverend Roxy's show a couple of weeks ago when we talked about the satellite crisis that was taking place, and was an interesting show. So those are a couple of shows that you're going to want to catch on BBS Radio, and I encourage you also to call in, especially tonight. We brought back my regular Friday night guest, Jim Murray. Actually, he's been doing a few Mondays here and there, and we got into such a deep topic last Friday and didn't really have enough time to finish, and this is going to be an ongoing saga, as you might very well imagine. So we brought Jim with us again tonight. Now, we want to encourage you to call in. This show is open for public discussion. You may have some questions. He would certainly be the one to pose any sort of scientific question to. And the numbers that we would like you to call in, toll-free in the USA, 877-876-5227. Toll-free in the U.S. and Canada, 888-815-9756. And the direct line, that's if you want to pay for the call or you have free long distance, area code 530-876-3222. We are entertaining calls this evening, and we encourage you to call into the show. Now, let's see, one small tidbit of news. Some of you may have heard that one of our public officials has been compromised and is embarrassing situation, and that is Governor Elliot Spitzer of New York. It seems that he has been tied to a prostitution ring. Now, I didn't know that prostitutes had rings, and I didn't know that you could get tied to them, but evidently that's the case. It's alleged that he has ties to this prostitution ring. We will find out if it's a diamond ring or an emerald or a ruby or gold or zircon. Anyway, we'll find out more about that, and we'll probably be reporting that on the TNT NewsHour on Wednesday afternoon at 1 p.m. Pacific, and I will be hosting that show. Quick announcement about other guests this week. On Tuesday, that's tomorrow, and Wednesday, two nights in a row, I have a special guest who appears on his own show on DBS Radio, as well as with Don Newsom on the Win and Don show, or is it the Don and Win show? Winfrey will be with us on the 11th and the 12th. That's Tuesday, tomorrow, and Wednesday. And, of course, Jim Murray will be back with us. Now, I'm working on a guest for Thursday, and usually if no one wants to be on the show, I sort of do it solo, but I always leave the door open for the Holy Spirit to come in and influence what might be said. So you want to stay tuned to the show. Also, next week, got some great guests lined up. Right now, they're going to be a bit of a surprise for you, but we will be sharing quite a bit more information. Next week is going to be a very spiritual week on Evident Footprints. I'll give you that tip up front. And with that, I would like to bring tonight's guest back. He was again with us last Friday, and he has found some time to spend with us tonight. His name is Jim Murray. Jim, how are you tonight?
Excellent, Don. How are you?
I'm just great. I've had a lot of practice shoveling snow over the past couple of days and feeling my oats, so pretty good.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I heard that Ohio got clobbered. The same storm skirted the southern part of Oklahoma and continued east, so I presume you got it.
Oh, yes, we got it big time. I haven't seen this much snow since I had a vacation ruined a couple of years ago when we got 3 feet of snow on Christmas Eve. So this reminds you of the snow we used to get when we were kids, actually.
Yeah, I remember those days.
And I kept saying every time I shoveled a scoop of snow and threw it off the sidewalk or the driveway, I thanked Al Gore for his letting us know about global warming, because if I would consider what it would be like without global warming, I'd still be out there shoveling. So, that said, we were going to pick up on our topic of last week, and I did want to mention that the source of the pictures that we were talking about at MarsAnomalyResearch.com came from a lady that works with the European Space Commission. I did find that out. So she evidently risked her life to get those pictures out. And those are the ones showing the cities and all the interesting topography that we talked about. Just thought I'd throw that your way.
Are you addressing me or the audience?
Well, you, actually. The audience hasn't called in yet, so they're not going to respond.
Well, and it's she did a great job. I just hope that nothing happens to her. But you got to admit, those are some pretty amazing pictures.
Absolutely, and it's going along with other information that is coming out. Some of a bit more metaphysical nature. I mentioned to you off the air that Bill Ryan and Carrie Cassidy of ProjectCamelot.org recently released a video interview of a young man by the name of Boriska, who lives in Russia. And from, I think he's about 12 years old now, but from a very young age, he began speaking about his recollection of life on Mars and the space research that the Martians were conducting. And it's a very interesting story because we now have video evidence of what he's been talking about.
I'd love to hear more about that. Is this available, or where can I encounter it?
Well, you and the listeners can go to projectcamelot.org and click on the interview heading at the top of their page, and they may even have it on the home page. I was there a couple of days ago, and they did have it right there. There is a transcript as well as the actual video, and it's quite interesting. Now, there is some translation going on, but the general story is that he just began one night around a campfire telling everyone, be quiet, I'm going to tell you what life was like on Mars. And the information he had, there's no way a young boy could come up with this on his own. And yet they're finding that there's great scientific fact behind what he's saying. So, projectcamelot.org would be the source of that information.
I'll definitely look into it because that stuff fascinates me.
Oh, yes. Now, we had also talked off air, and I think this bears some discussion based on the fact that we have all of these really strange stories going around about Planet X, another planet that's working its way back into our solar system. Some say that this is the planet Nibiru, and that it would be the Anunnaki coming back to, again, enslave the Earth, although they've been doing a pretty good job in their absence as well.
That's for sure.
And we had talked about Zechariah Sitchin and his numerous accounts of all the ancient lore that alludes to this group of people that come and go every 3,600 years. Their planet, according to legend, works its way into our solar system and then works its way out, and for the time that they're here, it's about 200 of our years every time they pass this way, and that rumor is floating about. You had another good one that you mentioned too. You might want to talk about that.
Are you referring to the has nothing to do with space, right? The thing you're referring to.
Well, it may. They'll figure a way.
Well, it's a strange place to interject it, but I'll be happy to repeat it. I caught part of a news flash earlier this evening that mentioned the fact that the Vatican has now issued some sort of an official statement saying that you may encounter eternal damnation and lose your soul for littering. And I thought that was incredibly funny, but other people may take it more seriously than I did. And you said you had a very interesting remark to make about that.
Well, yes. first of all, it depends on what your definition of litter is, because if that's the standard for going to hell, then I think many politicians are on their way there. Just for the amount of litter that they cause on a daily basis. And I guess you could litter the airwaves and the law books as well. So that's one comment I have. Now, I guess, is there such a thing as litter purgatory? In other words, it's in abeyance, I guess. You may get stuck between a rock and a hard place until it gets sorted out.
Well, I don't know too much about those things, but I just feel that it's a pretty amazing statement to make, if in fact it's true. And I'll let it go at that.
Sure.
I'll stick to what I know, Don.
Okay. It's now I can segue with this, believe it or not. And we had mentioned Bill Ryan and Carrie Cassidy from ProjectCamelot.org, and they have interviewed a lot of interesting scientists and people who have been affiliated with NASA or secret projects, mind control projects, you name it. And they're trying to get to the bottom of the whole Illuminati issue. And they had arranged to have an interview with Cristoforo Barbato, who has a Vatican connection, as I understand it. He is supposedly a Jesuit insider in the Vatican. They were unable to meet with him, but they had an interview with Luca Scantamburlo. Now, I don't know either of these gentlemen, but they said that they have an interview, and they took some footage of this conversation regarding Planet X, and supposedly Barbato has been misled intentionally. In other words, he's been fed disinformation to put out about this planet coming into our solar system. Now, I haven't seen it, and we get smatterings of this news every once in a while. I'm sure you've heard about it. I'm interested in your take, if you know anything or have heard anything about it. But from what they've been able to glean, Mr. Barbato is not really coming forth with this information that he was pretty eager to share with them. And they did spend some time in Italy with the intention of meeting with him, but it didn't come to pass. Any ideas on Planet X?
Well, frankly, the only information that I have on Planet X actually comes from Zachariah Sitchin's work. I read all 12 of his books, and there was some very fascinating information in there. The problem is that in a lot of cases, it's very difficult to separate what feels like truth from what might be disinformation or just plain writer's license, if you know what I mean. But the biggest problem I have with the whole Planet X thing is not the fact that it may be there or it may not. Because if the orbit is an extended ellipse, as they say it is, which is nearly perpendicular to the plane of our solar system, now first of all, that almost defies our normal understanding of planetary mechanics. So I don't know how it would get to be like that, but assuming that it was a real phenomenon, the biggest problem I have with the whole thing is that if it takes, what'd you say it was, 35,000 years between orbits?
No, 3,600 years.
Oh, I'm sorry, 3,600 years. Well, that's long enough.
Yeah.
And my point is that if it's way out there in some kind of an extended orbit like that, it's going to encounter some incredibly frigid temperatures. And now, Sitchin does point out that one of the reasons they came here in the first place was to harvest huge quantities of our metallic gold for the purpose of pulverizing this and sprinkling it in their atmosphere so that it would act as a thermos bottle and keep the heat from leaving the planet so that they could sustain themselves on these incredibly long orbital trips that they make until they return to the solar system. That sounds, far out to begin with, but the real question is, if in fact that was the true state of affairs, how did life on that planet begin in the first place? You know, that was my biggest problem. Unless, of course, they journeyed there from somewhere else, and then you'd have to ask, well, then why pick that place when they could have had Earth or, you know, any number of other more suitable environments? Somebody definitely visited the planet in the past. I don't have any doubt about that. Whether they were the Nephilim or the Nubaru or whatever other words they use remains to be seen, as does the point of their origin. But there's a lot of holes in the 10th planet idea, especially when you consider the orbit that it's supposed to have and how far out it's supposed to be. I mean, if you recall, when planet Pluto was still a planet before it got degraded, I mean, one of the things I used to talk about all the time was the incredible low temperatures that that planet would experience and how inhospitable it would be even to explorers. And the orbit of this 10th planet is even more extravagant than the orbit of Pluto. So that's my biggest concern from a scientific point of view. But that doesn't mean that I'm correct. There's always room for possibilities, especially in a universe as vast as our own. But it does raise a lot of questions, Don.
Now, there have been, you mentioned the gold, and one of the stories that comes out of this whole issue of the Anunnaki, and they were called the Anunnaki because their leader, Anu, was who they were following. And they had, for some reason, and this is the lore, I'm not saying that this is true or not true, but it was put forth that the prophet Abraham had been given control or charged with guarding uranium. And the word Ur is what they used for uranium. I found that to be rather interesting because, of course, uranium is one of the primary materials that they use for nuclear whatever. So I just found it interesting that they had to give this to Abraham, if that was true, and that he was responsible for guarding it. Now, if that gave him some special dispensation to be above everyone else because of that connection, that's one more piece of the puzzle sitting out there on the table, and you know, what puzzle is that piece going to fit? Especially if the Planet X was nothing more than a mothership, let's say.
Well, of course, that's a possibility, but then you'd have to also ask the question, why would it install itself in such a peculiar orbit and never bother to change that for a more realistic orbit unless it's disabled? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know why, regardless of how big the mothership is, I mean, why would you put it in such a bizarre orbit that it only showed up every 3,600 years? Unless, of course, that's just disinformation, and maybe it's journeying here from someplace. That makes a heck of a lot more sense.
Mm-hmm.
And don't forget, there's absolutely nothing to prevent an advanced civilization from designing a ship that looks like a small planet.
Yeah. Well, in the end, I'm sure we can count on NASA to fill us in on that, because they always tell us the truth, don't they?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Well, getting back to the mainstream that we had touched upon last week, shall I reiterate just a little bit for the sake of those who may not remember or
sure,
may not have
sure.
heard what we were doing?
Be my guest.
All right. What I was trying to do, folks, was to draw some parallels between some of my favorite sci-fi movies and the topics that they embodied, and things that then occur in the real world that seem to lend support to the fact that these ideas are not so far out as some people may believe them to be. That was the first premise, and also the fact that the total concept of inspiration may in fact come in different waves, like the inspirations that sci-fi writers pick up on because of the nature of the writer's mind and the fact that that it's easier to put things in writing than it is to make them a reality in this world. They may get the inspiration first, and then, you know, the scientific types may be influenced by what the writers have to say, or they may pick up on a different octave of the same information and eventually come out with something which is reminiscent of what was portrayed in the stories themselves. So what we had done was gone down a list of some of my favorite sci-fi movies, and I won't go back through it, but I will mention the ones that we talked about. It was 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, Frankenstein, and a rather not too well-known picture done by Boris Karloff, which was called The Invisible Ray. And that brought us up to the next picture, which is The Absent-Minded Professor, and then the sequel to that, which is The Son of Flubber. Now, those were Disney pictures, which, for all intents and purposes, were comedies, but they were based on some pretty interesting information, and there were some really cool parallels that came out of that a number of years later, and I would like to touch on those. First of all, in the Absent-Minded Professor movie, this guy played by Fred McMurray develops a new compound which releases energy in response to a physical agitation. So in other words, if you kick it or hit it with something, it responds in like kind. And this was the basis then of a flying car that he put together, which is a pretty humorous situation. But the same compound, which he referred to as flubber, in the second movie, was then bombarded with gas molecules and used to agitate the weather systems. And he was then using this to produce rainstorms and other weather anomalies. And one of the things they talked about was dry rain, which apparently was the precipitation of pure nitrogen into the soil. Now, what's interesting about all these things is that if you turn off the comedy for a minute and think about some researchers that were doing stuff in the real world, particularly back in the 50s and 60s, we had Wilhelm Reich and his Cloudbuster. And he was actually using cosmic forces through this device that he built, which looked like a pipe organ on the back of a semi truck. And he used to aim this thing at the clouds and change the weather patterns and do all sorts of interesting experiments with it, which is not unlike what the Absent-Minded Professor was doing with his weather device in the Disney movie. And it sort of begs for an explanation as to whether or not Disney was influenced by rumors of Reich's work, or whether it was a completely pristine idea, which was later reflected in the researches of Wilhelm Reich. I don't know the answer to that. But I do know that it's very interesting that we are presented with a sci-fi movie, and turns out that there is a real-life counterpart to the fictional aspect of this film. Had you heard about that, Don?
Are you speaking about Reif's orgone generators, or are you?
Well, the cloud busting experiments that he did in
yes, Southwest. I've conducted some of those myself. I've studied his research, and I've actually made some of those.
I have a friend who's made some too. They can be quite powerful, actually.
Actually, it would blow your mind that I can do that metaphysically without any other device.
I've actually heard of that. I believe you. I believe you. I know people who have done that with their eyes alone.
Yes.
And you know, that's based on some pretty amazing knowledge of a higher order, you might say.
Yes, I've actually taken it a step beyond what I've seen some do, where they have to focus their gaze on the clouds. I can begin the process and turn away from it, pay it no more attention, and the process continues.
Well,
and
that's pretty cool.
It is, and I can direct the energy toward a cloud, and I can tell you, well, I'm going to put a donut hole in the cloud, or I'm going to start at the right edge, or I can just make the whole cloud basically disappear. And this should be one of the feats that the amazing Randy, who had his $1 million prize, if you could show you had some metaphysical gift, he's the debunker who wants to discredit anyone that has any psychic ability. Of course, in denying that psychic ability exists, it's funny and a bit ironic that he would choose what he calls cloud busting as one of the criteria that does not count. In other words, if you can
count.
Yeah, according to him, I mean, it's hogwash, basically, for him to say that no one is psychic, yet if you want to demonstrate that you can make a cloud disappear, that's not psychic phenomena. Then what is it? You know, it's part of the ridiculous nature of you know, his disingenuous challenge to people with metaphysical gifts. But it is a very interesting phenomenon, and it doesn't really harm anything. You know, I don't. It's not intended to damage anything. In fact, it works on chemtrails too.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
Well, that's very valuable.
So I became interested in Reich's work. There are some people who are manufacturing these orgone devices. And basically, anything which is a contaminant or what is called deadly orgone, or DOR, can be overcome with one of his orgone generators. And they, over time, they reach a wider area. Four of these units made correctly could cover the whole state of Ohio. They could literally cover hundreds of miles in each direction if they're made correctly. So there is some truth to what you saw in the Disney movies, and I'm sure that the idea was given to Walt Disney's people to put that in story form just to see what our reaction would be. They even went so far as to make the Super Bowl, which imitated what Flubber was supposed to do.
Yeah.
So, you know, we find that, what is it, life can be much stranger than fiction, can it?
Well, it usually is, in my opinion.
Yeah, especially... It's getting
stranger all the time.
Yeah, especially in politics, right? Well, I didn't mean to take you off on a tangent. I was just responding to, you know, your question about the orgone. Yes, I have studied it. Now, I know also that there are some people that are representing themselves as developers of these devices, and there is a critical component to that, and that's when you create one of these positive orgone generators, you're actually drawing the deadly orgone into the unit itself, and it can be neutralized. However, if you touch the poles, for instance, and you mentioned an organ, what Reich used was copper tubing. to be a conductor. And there were various sizes and shapes of these devices that people come up with. I made a rather small one, was able to accomplish just as much as a large one. If you were to touch one of these copper pipes, you basically connect yourself to the ground of the device, and you discharge this negative orgone energy into your body. So it can be very debilitating. Some people have been paralyzed or experienced extreme adverse effects over a period of time, loss of the use of their legs, for instance, certain types of paralysis. So it can be dangerous. That's how well they work. So, you know, it's not recommended that you actually touch the metal on it, because you will become the ground and you will take in that negative or that what's called the DOR, the deadly orgone.
Well, I know that Reich used to use a flexible tube similar to a BX cable on the back of his accumulators and on his drawing pipes, as he called them. And these he would ground in running water. He would actually throw them into a stream. Mm-hmm. And apparently it sucks the orgone down and then neutralizes it by putting it in water. And I have a friend who actually builds small orgone busters of this sort. And he found that if you build these pipe clusters with the longest pipe and then the other ones kind of wrapped around it in a helix, and they get shorter as they wrap around, this whole device was built on a turret that rotates. And apparently when it rotates, it creates a vortex that really draws much more of this energy than you could affect with a stationary device. Mm-hmm. And he can set up a beam with this that you can actually step into, and within seconds you feel the change in your body as this charge is being drawn out of you. It's an undefinable feeling, Don, but it's something that if it occurs to you, you'll recognize that there's a change in your system immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So these forces that people are playing around with are definitely real. There was a fellow by the name of Trevor Constable that you might have heard of who picked up on Reich's weather work and did an enormous amount of work on that. I understand he actually had to go offshore because his researches were being challenged here in this country, which is not too surprising. But I'm not familiar with what became of the man. I only know that he was a staunch follower of Reich's work, and I understand he took it to new heights as far as weather control is concerned.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you, have you heard about the real reason for the St. Louis Arch?
The real reason for the St. Louis Arch?
Yes.
No? I'd love to hear about it, though.
What I've come across through my metaphysics studies and how it interfaces with science is that arch is loaded with electronic devices that basically are used to control the weather. And if you notice, there's often very inclement weather to the south of St. Louis, getting down to the central and the most southern part of the state, and bordering along western Tennessee and into Arkansas, even into Texas, and that arch acts as a sort of a conduit of sorts that directs certain energy to the south of that region. And they'll get inundated with bad weather. An example would be if you remember the caucuses that were taking place last month, and they had in Tennessee, they had a major tornado, I think it was an F4 that touched down at Union University, and there was quite a bit of damage there. There was loss of life as well. But there were 50 tornadoes that night. And it
yeah,
was
I remember
night,
that.
Yeah, it was a Tuesday night after the election. And we've had a series of these anomalies take place on election night. We had a major storm come through Ohio after the election. That was interesting. And they seem to be able to do this. Maybe the intent is to take our focus off counting the votes and just watching to see what's going to happen next with this very aberrant weather that we're experiencing. Thunderstorms in the middle of winter, for example, which is very, very rare and very infrequent, but it seems to be happening more and more now.
Well, it's difficult to say what they've got their fingers into, but one thing is absolutely unmistakable, and that is that the entire weather complex and the definition of the seasons has changed considerably in the last 20 or 30 years. And for anybody old enough to have lived through earlier periods of time, it's a very obvious thing.
Mm-hmm.
So something's going on.
Well, now speaking of weather and these anomalies that are occurring in other parts of our solar system, you were mentioning movies. I don't know that this is a favorite movie. I found it rather intriguing, and it's the movie Total Recall, which featured Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh,
I've
seen it.
Okay. And supposedly it took place on Mars. Of course, this is one of these sci-fi reality vacations that he took. It's an offshoot of the concept of The Matrix, but I think it preceded The Matrix. And the whole idea is he can basically pick and choose what experiences he's going to have on this vacation. So he ends up in Mars, and you have all these underground tunnels, and you have him creating an atmosphere at the end of the movie, and where his eyes are bugging out of his head as the pressure around the planet is changing, and it alludes to the fact that they're trying to get a message out there, and I suspect that it's greater than just entertainment. Any ideas on that?
Well, I don't know about ideas on that, because it's to me, it's always been, I don't know how to explain it, but it seems like there's two opposing forces at work here, because it's almost like some aspects of the film industry want to enlighten the public with subtle messages about what might be going on for the sake of letting them know the truth. And yet there seems to be another facet that makes use of the same industry for the opposite purpose of disinformation and suppressing the truth. And I'm not sure exactly how that works, but I've definitely gotten hints of both types of messages from watching various films over the years. But with respect to the movie that you chose, I think it's kind of interesting, because there again it hints at the fact that Mars was once the center of an alien race that was quite advanced, and they had left their air-generating machinery and whatnot sitting there so that it could be reactivated and a new atmosphere constructed on the planet and this and that. And there were some very interesting ideas going on there. But
well, the whole concept of these generators, and you know, they covered the whole planet basically. This thing was capable of creating an atmosphere for the whole planet. I think that stretch of science fiction is just intended to further promote the idea that that's the only way there could be life on such a planet, as if all these things that happened in the movie occurred, when in reality it's just an attempt to disinform, I feel. Especially,
well, that could very well be, because don't forget, we only know about the atmospheric content of these other planets, again, through the courtesy of NASA. So whatever information they detect, with their instruments up there, or with other, through other means, is not necessarily relayed to us in a faithful manner. You know, we assume that it is, but supposing that it isn't. Now, these latest pictures of the Martian surface that shows swampland, lakes, streams, trees, vegetation, hints of animal life, not to mention the cities with roads and factory complexes and all this kind of stuff, would certainly indicate that there's an atmosphere there already. If there isn't, something is desperately wrong. And
yeah.
So, it makes you wonder just what the truth really is. But Mars has always been a particular planet of fascination for me. And it's interesting that you mentioned the fact that this young boy seems to recall a previous lifetime on that planet. And the reason why it's interesting is for two reasons. I've had many discussion with people about the concept of reincarnation, which I happen to believe in. And one of the arguments you hear all the time is, well, you know, in the old days, meaning the biblical times, there were so many fewer people on Earth. Where did all these souls come from? And, of course, it's amazing, because the normal thinking is still geocentric thinking. It's like the Earth is the only place where anything can be going on. And if reincarnation is a reality, then so is the concept of the transmigration of souls. There's no reason why souls from other galaxies, other planets, you know, other solar systems, whatever, couldn't choose to come to an Earth-type planet for the sake of an incarnation here. And, of course, that opens up an enormous variety of possibilities to ponder upon. And as far as referencing the Bible is concerned, I'm always fond of one phrase in which I believe Christ is the one who said it, that in the house of the Father there are many mansions. I've always taken that to mean that in this limitless universe, there are many habitable planets, and I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. But, you know, to each their own. But the reason it stimulated me, too, was because as a youngster, I had a lot of feelings about Mars. I mean, I never claimed to have been reincarnated from there, because I certainly don't know if that's the case or not, but I will tell you that I had really, really strong connection with that planet and a big draw to anything having to do with Mars.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just interesting to hear that there's this young fellow who claims to have been, you know, a citizen of that world at one time. I definitely would like to read his interview, as you suggested.
Well, if we had such a finite existence, you know, at the end of our life, that we were going to be left here, we might be found guilty of littering, I would think. So we would want to, that we go someplace, and I would have to think that you know, there are people that have certain skills that are absolutely unexplainable. For instance, you find someone who is deaf and blind and really lacking in any certain amount of mental capacity to, let's say, perform scientific experiments or perform feats of, let's say, intellect, and then these people can sit down at a piano and play it like they've been playing it for 100 years.
Yeah, I was going to say that. There's some of the greatest composers that, you know, they came here and at a very, very young age were already producing works of musical art that were just incomprehensible. And, you know, where does that stuff come from? I believe you bring it with you.
Yeah. The concept of heaven and rising to the ultimate level of consciousness might be the gift that we get when we earn it and through, you know, getting it right finally. So I'm not inclined to think that some people come and they go to kindergarten and then they graduate with a doctorate degree. I would think that we come back again and again and again until we finally get it right. And if there's an ascension at that time, that would occur. You earn that right.
That makes perfect sense to me. You know, this, I have always adopted the attitude that the universe is such a complex creation, and we know so very little that I'm very, very reluctant to take a firm stance on some of these issues that other people are so dogmatic about, simply because of the fact that anything can be possible. You know, we really don't know anything about anything, Don. And that's the actual truth.
Yeah, you know, your car can be useless. It can become useless because it's rusted and not running anymore, and it can be recycled and reconverted into something useful. Why can't the soul? You know, it's I think it's something worth arguing. Now you have people you know, of a religious mindset that are not even going to entertain that thought, although they can see other examples of that in many other ways if they keep an open mind. It's like the concept of space travel, for instance. There are many people that don't even believe that that's possible, and there are those of us that know that it's going on, and it's actually quite successful these days, and very prevalent, right in our own atmosphere and outside of our atmosphere. So whether someone is experienced in that, if they have firsthand experience of flying saucers or they don't, there are those that have seen these craft and maybe wonder what they've seen, or they've had flashes of consciousness that they've never dared to share with anyone because of the potential ridicule. And these are all control mechanisms designed to really keep us ignorant and to suppress this higher knowledge.
Well, you know, it's all of that is absolutely true, but there's another thing that we need to consider too. And I have given this quite a bit of thought over the years. I once was in touch with some researchers at the Rhine Institute, a Rhine University out east, and they were doing psychic experiments, mostly in telepathy and telekinesis in those days. But one of the things that they had put together was a distribution curve of human consciousness. And what's interesting about it is that it does manifest itself quite nicely in a standard bell curve arrangement. But the interesting thing about it is that the people with the highest level of conscious development in our world are clustered at the very top of the curve and represent a very, very small number. And then as you descend the slopes of the curve on both sides, you pass through almost an infinite variety of other levels of consciousness until you get down to the very lowest level, which I'm not even sure what sort of consciousness they have. But the point being here that depending on where you are on that curve, your perceptions of reality and what your mind allows you to comprehend about your environment and the world you live in are definitely going to be changing. And I think that planet Earth definitely has a kindergarten and, a grade school and a high school and possibly a college level type situation. And so the souls that come back, those individuals who want to learn more are going to situate themselves higher and higher on the curve of consciousness until they reach a point where they don't belong here anymore. And then I'm sure they'll find another world where they can go through the same type of development to some other exciting level of their mental and spiritual evolution. But
I agree with you.
Because we have such a large smattering of different character types and intellectual capacities on this planet, we realistically can't expect all those individuals to appreciate, understand, and cherish the same things. So it doesn't really surprise me at all that that you have such an enormous swing in the way people respond to these happenings in our world, particularly those that that border on the esoteric or the superconscious levels, simply because of the fact that it may be beyond their ability to comprehend or to respond to or whatever. Don't you feel that there's some truth in that?
Sure. And I also think that there are probably the same differences or the same varieties, let's say, on other planets. And take into consideration even the highest form of intelligence on this planet might be looked at as preschool on some of these other planets. So depending on the age of the society and the experience of the society and the ultimately the consciousness of the society, there is going to be a collective curve that's much higher, and there's probably a few that are equal or below the Earth. I don't think we're at the bottom of the totem pole, but I think we're pretty far down there.
Funny you should bring that up, because one of my favorite films, which I had actually intended to save for last, but you opened the door to it, and I'm gonna go right on through, is The Forbidden Planet. And that's a fantastic movie about a race of beings that had developed such an incredible knowledge, not only of technology, but also of the higher forces having to do with mind and spirit, to the point where they were capable, using their machinery, of direct creation. In other words, they would think of something, and it would just manifest for them in the real world. And of course, the hitch to the whole thing was that as advanced and benevolent as they were as a race, on a conscious level, the problem was that their subconscious minds st- still had the more primitive aspects of their earlier development and their animal lusts and hatreds and all of those types of things. And so as a result of that, at night when they would sleep, their subconscious minds would also activate the machine and produce horrible monsters that would go out and slaughter and maim until finally there was nobody left on the planet. And the crux of the story revolves around this expedition from Earth that discovers this deserted world and tries to make use of the surviving Krell machinery, which was located underground. And that was exactly the theme of this instrumentality. They would test their young in this device and would show their intellectual capacity, and there was a column, a calibrated column that was probably 50, 60 feet high, and as the star of the show, Walter Pidgeon, said, a healthy Krell child is expected to push the indicating rod all the way to the top, and when he took the test, it barely registered on the bottom, which would probably categorize him as a moron by their standards. And yet he had an official IQ of 287 or something like that. So it's interesting that this theme that we're discussing, has already manifested itself in sci-fi stories. And in all probability, it's true. I can easily see how beings from other worlds could be more advanced than us, but also there may be planets that are still in the Dark Ages or still in the caveman ages. And who knows what you would encounter if you could actually get out there and beat the bushes. The universe is a very big place, and it's designed for a specific purpose. And I think the alchemists had it right when they said that the whole reason for existence is basically for us to transmute ourselves into a higher form of being. And what is the ultimate goal when you're transforming yourself into a higher form of being in the course of, let's say, 1,000 lifetimes? What do you become? These are the kinds of things that are worth thinking about. And it's just a shame that the general consciousness is never directed into these types of thoughts. It's usually, how much money can I get? How many girls can I get? How big can I grow my business? All these different things that have really nothing to do with what I believe the universe is designed to bring out in each of us.
Yeah, you're talking about the false reality on this planet. Now, you brought to mind one other movie that bears mentioning, and that's The Three Stooges Go to Mars. You remember that one?
Well, I've seen that, and I've also seen Abbott and Costello go wherever they went, to Mars or the moon or something.
What I remember about that movie is that they didn't need spacesuits when they got up there. There were giant spiders. I think they were tarantulas, and plenty of women. Go ahead.
I was going to say, it seems like there's always plenty of women.
Oh, well, Jim, we're out of time. This has been fascinating, though. We've been all over the board on this topic tonight, and we can pick up on Friday with The Three Stooges Go to Mars if you want to.
Well, I don't remember that movie, but I definitely have quite a list left. It's worth discussing, and I'll be more than happy to continue on with it on Friday, Don, if that's your wish.
Yeah, and I have been working on these pages. I've not published them yet, but I've got quite a number of photographs to put up on the website. So between now and Friday, maybe you want to just take a peek at my web page, especially the photos section, and you'll you'll have some interesting things to look at.
Be happy to do that.
Okay, Jim, thanks for being on the show tonight. Folks, you have been listening to Mr. Jim Murray and your host, Don Nikoloff, just reminiscing over all the Mars movies and some strange anomalies going on around the world, even today, on Evident Footprints. And Jim will be back with us this Friday evening, same time, same place, so be sure to tune in. Again, tomorrow and Wednesday, a special guest will be Mr. Win Free, and I'm looking forward to that. 2 hours of information. In the meantime, thanks for tuning in to bbsradio.com. Special thanks to our audio engineer, Seth Hendrick, and to Mr. Donald Newsom, and Doug, too, if you're listening, Doug. In the meantime, peace, love, and light, and we'll see you tomorrow night. Bye now.
Everybody, this is Senior Seberg. I am the star of science fiction series Lex, which I'm sure you